listening to an episode of the Let's Netflix and Chill podcast hosted by Reese Chanson. Hello and welcome to yet another episode of the Let's Netflix and Chill podcast. Today we're looking at an anime, a series based off a manga of the same name, The Oku, The Inner Circle. Of course, the anime or the manga traditionally is written and illustrated by... Now, bear in mind here, it's a Japanese name, so I'm not gonna try to pretend I know how to read this word. So bear in mind as I try to butcher this name. Fumi Yoshinga writes and illustrates this Japanese manga. Of course, Netflix based the anime series off the manga. Okay. Now... Of course, the manga first came out on 2004 to 2020, and you know, it's got about 19 volumes or so. Of course, the manga later on licensed to the North, and Netflix picks it up and makes an anime series. So, okay, the storyline itself. Okay, the story is based in the Edo period Japan, which is around 1603 to 1868. A strange new disease takes place. It's called the disease is called red face smallpox. Begins to prey on the country's men. I'm talking about Japan here. And within 8 years of the first outbreak, the male population has fallen to a quarter of the total female population, and this results to women taking up roles or positions that are traditionally granted to men. And even the role of the shogun. Now, if you don't unaware, the shogun is literally the king, the ruler of said time and period. The men who were previously providers now live luxurious lives. And they're well looked after by women. And some of the most beautiful, well-pleasing men are sent to serve at Edo Kaisel as the shogun's inner servants, sexual beings, in a way. They work at the inner chambers where it's just a population of men. Like, it basically, this is the most condensed place you will see a group of men living together. And there, these men are used or they serve the shogun sexually. And shogun chooses whenever she feels like to have an sexual encounter with any of these men. Now, this is a really unique show. It's not definitely your average anime. So if you're into traditional Japanese culture and all that, this is a show for you. But of course, if you're looking for classical isekai, this definitely may not be the right show for you. Now, as I already said, the show takes place in the Edo period, where it's basically the bizarro world of the modern day society. Roles are reversed. Women are farmers. Women are holding position of government or rule. Women own businesses. Women do literally every living thing. And they do it all. They give birth and they work hard. And men are just flowers that are looked after, because the male race or the male population is literally going extinct. Like, they're dying like rats, fam. And they're dying because of this disease. Now, first off, the description of the disease in itself is weird. It's called red pox. Red face smallpox, whatever you want to call it. So basically, you get a bunch of pox. Your face, your body turns red, and you got lumps and bumps all over your face, which are red, internally making it red face smallpox. Now, ideally, the name is a bit bizarre because your whole body gets red pox. But I guess it was strange because the name is given because traditionally you don't have that level of smallpox that they bruise and cover your face, your eyes, your ears. You can't literally see. It's quite an interesting concept. Now, the whole story is quite exhilarating. Of course, the story in the beginning starts off with the disease affecting only young men, like boys of 8 to 12, boys of 12 to 18, basically the creme de la creme of young specimen males, and eventually, somehow, certain weak generations, I suppose, it even goes all the way to 40 to 30 men. So initially, when you're over 20, you're like, I'm not going to get this thing. And then suddenly people start getting it to the point where the current shogun, when the story begins, gets the smallpox, not the red face pox, and sort of dies. And according to his death, when a king dies, what needs to happen is a proper funeral for him. Regions, the masses know that the shogun has died. But instead of that, the shogun's mother, to put it in a way, sort of covers it up and makes the daughter of the late shogun ruler. Her whole purpose is to, the whole reasoning really is to protect the bloodline, is to, if usually when a shogun dies, there's bound to be rebellion amongst all the other royal families in order to try to take the throne. And so she protects the family bloodline and protects the whole thing, the grandmother, or the mother of the former shogun, and sort of gets her granddaughter onto the throne, and then she becomes the leading shogun. And of course, all the women that used to work in the whole inner chambers are sort of disembonded or take their leave because the shogun is no longer a man. And what's odd to me is, why would people think in the village that the palace would hire a group of men in a time of crisis? Hire a group of men. Of course, initially it makes sense because they're hiring a group of men to do all the hard labor at the palace. Okay. But the initial point of the whole, the inner chambers, was that if men were deteriorating, the palace officials decided that it would be beneficial if men were dying at an exceedingly annoying rate. They should gather all the young men that have martial art abilities, capabilities, gather them around the palace and keep them so they could be some sort of last defense in case of an attack from outside forces. But because they were aware that if men were dying because of this disease, very soon we'll have less men. And if you have less men, we're liable to be attacked by foreign nations, and we don't want that. So if you don't want that, what you do is you group all the healthy men that you can find, you give them suitable life, and you sort of keep them training, working hard. So that's a great idea. But the problem arises when the shogun dies. Now all these men now have another, they have a secondary duty, basically. The secondary duty is to fuck the shogun, who happens to be female, to please her. So marriage becomes luxury. Those that get married are deemed selfish in a way. And you don't necessarily get mad if your husband sleeps with other women. You're like, eh. And families start pimping out their male children to have sex with various women, and in order to bring income to families, which some people deem disgraceful and impure and dirty and filthy, but it gets the livelihood going. Brothels are no longer occupied by women. They're occupied by males who are basically sucked the life out of them. They're imprisoned by whoever owns those brothels into fucking nonstop to women that are paying. Basically, it gets to a point where prices of sex are even ridiculous, fam. Ridiculous, because the guy who's fucking is bony as fuck, because I don't think he's even eating. He's just fucking, and women are just draining the seeds out of these niggas. And you could say, hey, at least these niggas are not working. So basically, this whole storyline is a feminist dream, really. You know, those people that say, men are great and all, but women can do whatever men can do, sometimes even better. So this whole story puts that into life, gives fruit to it. And says, here, women, this is your opportunity. And women blossom. For some reason, they blossom. They work together. They band together. Initially, some older women are against the whole idea of women working in farms, owning, becoming merchants, fishermen, and doing all that. But eventually, it just becomes part of society. That's what we have to do. And odd thing is, since men, I don't know, the whole concept is this affects Japan only, I'm assuming. It's a national pandemic, so they seal off the border to prevent people from coming in and finding out that their population is mostly women. And they start giving women names of men and men names of women in such a way to give the illusion that there are more men than there are less women. They start meeting foreign government officials in secret meetings where they don't even get to see the shogun. They even get a body double for the shogun, who happens to be female, by the way. A body double who attends all the official meetings. That of course, that takes a while before they actually present the female shogun to the world. It takes a few years, but initially they get a body double. And not even the ministers get to see the shogun. He's always covered and hidden. All they know is his voice. But the ruler is a female who's ruthless. So initially, it's just the first shogun takes the macho role of a rock hard human being of a male who's ruthless. Now, when you think about it at first, you're like, man, this woman's an asshole. These guys are like, there's a whole concept of the first guy who sleeps with the shogun gets killed because he basically defies the body of a shogun. Now, that's interesting. Of course, when you look at the whole trauma and how these laws are made, first, the first shogun gets raped and sort of kills the guy who rapes her, and then that becomes law. And when you think about the first shogun, that she's a child of rape, like her father, the former shogun, raped her mother and then gave birth to her. And then the palace people came and killed the mother. And then eventually, years later, at the age of 14 or 15, she also gets raped and has a miscarriage. And now she's being forced or cornered into becoming a pumping machine for the next generation. She has to give birth. That means she has to fuck a variety of niggas. Now, at first, she probably does it out of pleasure, out of spite, to show that these men are beneath her. She belittles them and shit like that. So the whole thing works like that. Of course, eventually she falls in love with this other guy. And they were bullying people. Like, they took a monk. A monk who was peak condition of male specimen in terms of look. They forced him into submitting and becoming basically a fucking concubine. Of course, the shogun falls in love with him and he becomes a lover of the shogun. And problem is, dude can't even give birth or produce seeds of some sort. So dude has to convince the love of his life to sleep with other men for the future generations. Basically, he's out here because he's the senior concubine, whatever. He's out here recruiting other concubines, telling them, go fuck the love of my life so she can bring forth children. Which is heartbreaking when you look at it that way. And of course, so it's quite brilliant in that aspect. And eventually, women come out in the open. Women come out in the open. The shogun, the first female shogun, is sort of displayed to the world. And families who were previously hiding their genders or basically cross-dressing their female children to be men so that they seemed like their business was still, or their family line was still, their position of power was still held by a man. Because if you had no heir, you would basically lose the seat of parliament, whatever it is. Because seat of parliament were passed down generation to generation to the next male, to the most eligible male of a certain family. So family started covering it up as well. Wealthy families, of course, started covering up that they had no sons because their sons died. And they started giving their daughters names and raising them like men to take over the family business of some sort. So eventually, of course, it comes to fruition that the shogun is also a woman, and everybody's a woman. Everybody comes out in the open as a woman, and the country's ruled by women. Pretty much it. Now, the story in itself is quite interesting. It takes what is deemed sort of impossible, that women can do whatever men can do by certain people. I'm not saying it's impossible, and brings it to life. Women become farmers, mothers, and men. Basically, it's a bizarro world of the current world, really, which it's well written, well animated, well constructed. It's brilliant on my personal views. Now, other people will say it's not, but for me, I really enjoyed the storyline. It was a twist that I had never thought of it being done, and I really enjoyed it. Well done story. Now, there's so many elements to look at this. There's so many variables and so many things. And the way the story ends towards the end, it ends on some sort of cliffhanger. Of course, the first episode, it has about 10 episodes, if I'm not mistaken. First episode is pretty long. It's like an hour, 45 minutes, if I'm not mistaken. And then the following episodes hold less time, 30 minutes at most. And the following episodes are pretty much a backstory of how things got to where they are. How, of course, it doesn't delve deep into some of the causes of Red Fake's pox. It doesn't tell us how it stopped spreading. It doesn't give us more details on the disease itself. But what it does is it gives us an insight of the lives of those around, those that are affected directly and indirectly by the disease itself. It opens a market for male prostitution. It opens a market or a space for women empowerment. So it opens an ideology that women can rule men. It's got an Amazonian type of vibes, you know, the Wonder Woman type shit, where women rule everything and there are less men. But unlike babies coming to shore and men showing up just to smash. I don't know. I don't even know how the Amazon keep making babies, but that's not a point. So it's a really interesting and compelling story in my personal view. And I would recommend it to anyone who enjoys anything that has to do with Japan, either their traditions or their culture. Anyone who enjoys a basic animation show. This is it for you. And even if some people don't actually watch anime, they tend to watch Korean dramas, where they talk about the whole Joseon era and stuff. I think this got those type of vibes, which makes it interesting for Japanese animation. It's got those Korean story type of vibes. So I think everyone who watches Korean shows will enjoy this. And everyone who watches traditional anime will enjoy this. So this is for the romance lovers anyway. It's got romance and it's got a bit of brutality in it. It's got sacrifice in it. Like, to love someone to the point where you will sacrifice your happiness for them to fulfill their duty. That's quite heartwarming. That's quite odd and strange. For me, of course, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't let nobody sleep with my woman just so she could have a kid. Fuck that shit. If it has to be, I'd rather divorce her than be in the other room while another guy is fucking the daylight shit out of her. While she pretends to fucking hate it, even if she's hating it, and falls pregnant. And I have to be nice to this new fucker. And this motherfucker gets all proud and starts walking like he's got balls of a bull. Oh my god, I got balls that make children. This nigga doesn't. So, and it shows how dramatic and wild women are. But I'm not necessarily saying men weren't wild traditionally in those eras where they made female concubines weren't rude and odd. Because the first scene, the leading shogun, the first shogun, in the Edo dynasty or Edo era or period, basically rapes a woman just for the fun of it. Crazy. And then there's some weird fetish where someone just goes around cutting people's hair. It's weird. And they're making men wear women's clothes. This is just like the basic premise of the whole. I don't want to get canceled or anything, but this, I think all transgender people would love this. They would. But this cross-dressing sort of vibe is mostly because of a circumstance, a crisis, a national crisis, not for personal appeal or personal feelings. I feel like this inside. No, for constitutional and, you know, type of survival as a nation, as a people. Like, if there are more females, it's easier for outside forces to attack you because you have no male counterparts or no male species or no male beings. That, of course, that this oral story makes me wonder, did this pandemic only affect Japan, or was it spread wide? And if it was spread wide, were the other nations surrounding Japan, or other diplomatic nations that, or in business that share trade and everything with Japan, were they experiencing the same crisis? And did they hide it the same way? Or was this just a Japanese thing? I do not know. The story does not delve deep into that. The story, what the story talks about is mostly concealing this information. They close off borders, I already mentioned. They make sure that no one finds out what's happening within the nation. So the nation becomes somehow covert and secretive, which would make anyone suspicious, but it is what it is. Anyway, thank you for listening. I hope I did the show justice, because I really enjoyed it, and I think everyone should watch this. Now that was entertaining. You just listened to an episode of the Let's Netflix and Chill podcast with Reese Jansen. With that being said, remember to support the podcast on Patreon, and let's hang out another time. Adios, folks. Adios.